Is she ready?
Wow, that's just...
Yep.
It was like...
We're going to open our Rules Committee today on, it must be the 11th, it's going by so quickly. We had about five different bills on the schedule today. My first order of business is to move House Bill 3638 and House Bill 3671. We're still waiting on another amendment. We're going to move those off till Monday with possible work sessions as well. And we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3702. And Representative Berger.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 3702, the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Right. Vice Chair Berger moves House Bill 3702 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? And just to bring up people up to date, this is the bill that had to do with the commission and the changing of a word from shall to may that we talked about yesterday. So any further discussion? Seeing none. Representative, is there anybody who is in opposition to this particular bill? Seeing none, so ordered. So we did make the motion. Carrier, I think I'll assign Representative Gelser. She's not here. Something was really important to her. Hopefully she'll be back tomorrow. But at some point, anybody, so Representative Gelser. So we're going to close our work session on House Bill 3702, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3704. And with that, I'm going to ask Paul Romaine to be our first introduced speaker. He maybe can give us a little history of the whole bottle bill saga of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, I don't think he knows much about it.
Yeah, right.
It was there.
That was a facetious remark, oh. Mr. Chair. Oh,
okay. all right. My name's Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland. I'm here representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a number of folks have asked for a brief overview of why we're here and the need for 3704, and I'm going to try and capsulize that, let you know why we got here. When Oregon was the first state to mandate returnable containers in 72, when it went into operation, the 71 legislative session, it was sort of the brainchild of Representative Berger's father. And it was a simple system back then. Basically, most stuff was franchised, beer and pop, and already had a deposit on it because it was a returnable container that you actually wanted to refill. The market changed over the years. The kind of drinks available changed over the years, and the distribution patterns for a lot of those drinks changed over the years. So back in the 2007 session, we were faced with the great likelihood, almost certainty, of expansion of the bottle bill to other kinds of drinks besides beer and soda. There were really two problems that we were faced with, and that was, how do you expand it given the weird distribution systems that existed for a lot of the waters and other drinks out there? And the second one was related to a problem that consumers had, is how do you return the containers when you're not at the store that sells that particular brand? In other words, you bought a Coke and you're not at a store that sells Coke, you're at a store that sells Pepsi. So how do you return it because they don't have to take it back under the old system? It's called universal redemption. So Representative Berger basically and I talked a little bit about this, and what I promised I would do is try and craft a system that actually worked, that we could put together a statewide system that allowed you to expand to water. And frankly, that was an experiment, because water at least is a defined product. We knew what it was. And to somehow craft a system where consumers could take back their containers any place. Because one of the complaints you all were getting were, I took my stuff back to so-and-so's store and they wouldn't give me my nickel back because they didn't sell it. So we did two things with the bill. We made for universal, well, first of all, we expanded. And second of all, we made for universal redemption, which meant that whatever container, if you bought a container of water, and there's a lot of private label water out there, you could take that back to any place that sold water. But to do that, you had to set up a system to collect that container from the retailer. Because it might have been that that one, the person who delivered that container didn't really service an area where you were returning that container. So how do you do that? How do you set up a system where, in effect, all these containers can get back and you could get your nickels back and they can all get recycled? So what we did was we said, if you sell a kind of product, either beer, soft drink, or water, you are to take back all brands of that. And the theory was that all the distributors, the soda and beer and water distributors, would form a cooperative organization to get the bottle and container back. And almost everyone did. There is a container group around the state, Oregon Beverage Recycling Co-op, or cooperative, that is designed simply to do that. The problem is that there's a few distributors in the state who basically don't want to be in the system. And believe me, nobody in the beverage business wanted that expansion. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted to change the system. Everybody loved working under it the way it was. But the system was changed. You mandated that change. And so we were faced with, how do you set up a system to get it all back? The easiest way to do it, frankly, although not the cheapest way, by far the most expensive way, would be to say, here, DEQ, you take all these deposits and you set up the system and just run it. And we'll just back away. We'll give you all the money that comes in from unredeemed deposits and scrap and everything else, and you run the system. That system, we don't think, would work very well because it would be very expensive. The best way to do it is if those who were actually in the delivery business formed a cooperative where they set up the redemption system, because then the redemption system is not a point of profit for anybody. It's simply a way to manage the system and keep the costs down. And that's what it is. The redemption co-op is designed to set up the recycling centers that we're starting to build out, to assist with the grocers with doing recycling at individual grocers, to basically make the bottle bill work. But it only works if everybody's in the system. And normally you would think people would just join. People have their own parochial reasons for not joining, and most of it, frankly, revolves around money. If they get to keep their own unredeemed and they don't have to be in the system, they don't have to help build out any kind of redemption centers, they basically can operate the way they were operating under the old bottle bill, which worked fine under the old bottle bill, but this is not the old bottle bill anymore. It's the new bottle bill, the expanded bottle bill. The model that we have set up for the state will work. It will work very well. The problem that you have right now, and the reason this bill is before you, is it's a way to somehow encourage people to join in the co-op and not free ride off the co-op. It's a way to actually make what you mandated work. I sort of laugh when I hear that we're forcing people into a cooperative. Well, the legislature forced us into a bottle bill. You forced us to do this. Believe me, most business people would not voluntarily jump into this situation. You don't see other distributor organizations in other states willingly and embracing a bottle bill and saying, here, give it to us. We'd love to have this system. It costs us money to do it. But what you have in Oregon is a unique situation. We, because we're the first one, we have the simplest bottle bill. We're able to work with the system. We're able to craft something, to take a little chance, to try and put together a co-op. The co-op idea actually came in the late 80s, about 89, when we were having problems in Portland. We were having problems with back rooms. We would go into back rooms and there'd be a lot of kind of funny things with exchanging of can bags, which are containers of can or bags of empty cans. And what we decided then is to basically get a bunch of distributors who are very independent together and put together a co-op for the Portland area to pick up containers. And we had folks saying there's no way they're going to join. It's terrible. They can't stand it. They lose their independence. We had grocers who didn't like it because, you know, they want to basically be able to deal with a couple of individuals. And lo and behold, after a couple years of operation, all of a sudden everybody loved it because it cut the costs and it made the system work efficiently. That's what the current co-op does. Your help is needed because you mandated that we do a system where it's universal redemption. You can redeem almost any place. Now you have to help us make sure that that system works by making sure that everybody is in the system. Otherwise, you get people basically writing off the work of others. Be happy to explain anything else or talk about anything else. Or
Representative Garrett.
Paul, can you just explain in a little more detail what you perceive as the free rider problem and how that plays out? Just give us an example.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Garrett, the co-op is going to be building out redemption centers in the state. Basically, assuming those redemption centers are built out in all areas of the state, who is going to fund those? That's funded, frankly, from the unredeemed deposits. It's funded, and when that is not enough, frankly, and it isn't enough, you'll have distributors actually putting in money. If the co-op is, in effect, doing that, then and people aren't in the co-op, then their containers will go back to that redemption center, but they're not funding the build-out of the redemption center. In addition, frankly, just follow the money. If you have product that has a very, very low redemption rate right now, you really don't want to be in the co-op. You have you get the unredeemed deposits. You get to keep them. That's, you know, everybody in the co-op is pooled their resources to build out the system and make it work. So when I say free riders, basically that's what's happening out there.
Other questions?
One other point, if I could. It also evens out redemption rates. It's interesting, I received a, if you happen to be on a border, you may have an over-redemption problem, literally. I had a distributor from Ontario call me, he had a 130% redemption rate and was complaining. And he was not a member of the co-op. And we couldn't figure out why he wouldn't be a member of the co-op, because he'd actually make money by joining the co-op. Because the co-op basically takes the pluses over here and minuses over here and puts them all across the state, sort of makes them everybody's problem, not just the local problem. So it evens out the pluses and minuses in the bottle bill.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll ask Joe Gilliam to come up next, and I'll let you be by yourself. And then I've got a group of people on the opposite side, so I want to give kind of make sure we get equal time. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Gilliam. I represent the Northwest Grocery Association. I represent both independents and large chains around the state, the retailers who implement the bottle bill. And since Senate Bill 707, we resisted 707, but since that time, you know, once the bill passed, we have spent the last 2 years going to a lot of effort to implement 707. I think Paul covered the mechanics of it. I'd be glad to answer your questions on that, but I don't want to drag you through that again. But this bill helps us complete the implementation of 707. In our back rooms, and this isn't the sexy stuff about the bottle room, about the bottle bill, but it's our back rooms. The co-ops were a huge change for the retailers in terms of handling all the containers. And I think if, for those of you around the 70s, and I know Representative Berger has seen the whole evolution, we went from that hand bottle count in front of the store to separate boxes. I don't know if you remember that, where every brand had its own box, so they had to count into the boxes. And God bless you if the bottle boy lost count and just start over. And that was the evolution of that, but we had to separate every brand that came through. And to the point where the co-ops came on, and all the brands could go in together, counted quickly, the advent of the reverse vending machines and try to move people along their way. So it wasn't their problem about sorting. That is a huge piece for us, since when you put the glass in a machine, it gets crushed and it goes into a bin, and the cans get crushed and the plastic gets compressed, and so it's ready to go back and be shipped out. Now, we have all that cost on us. As you know, there's no fees or anything in the bottle bill, so that comes to us. 707 did change that for us, because now we're counting, collecting, and processing cans and bottles and glass that we may not even sell. So we have to have a way, if we don't sell that brand, we've given that nickel to the consumer up front. Now we have to go get our nickel. So rather than everybody chasing each other around trying to find the nickels, Fred Meyer has an Albertsons can, they got to go to Albertsons, Safeway to Freddy's, Winco to here. The OVRC model makes the retailer whole. All the containers go into one area, basically three different sorts, glass, aluminum, and plastic, and then all goes out the same place. Doesn't matter what brand is in there, because the central location, we get our nickels. So it doesn't matter if Fred Meyer's taking it to Walmart, that nickel's going to be made whole. It's all done. This bill, we've been having some problems. We were 95% there, and it's been a marvelous job. I gotta really tell you how impressed I am with the OBRC and the people who run it, John Anderson and his crew, because they did a monumental task in 24 months. They basically took five co-ops and blended them together, a lot of assets, a lot of employees, management styles, and made this thing work. And we're just back down to basically 5% of folks who don't want to change. They want to ignore that 707 didn't happen. They don't want to participate because they don't have to. We can only go to a point, we're not going to put a gun to these folks' head and say, you are joining OBRC, because the very nature of the co-op doesn't work that way. It really does have to be a cooperative. And everyone in a cooperative has to pull their weight at the same rate as everybody else. It's truly doing your fair share. You can't cut special deals. You're in for a penny, you're in for a pound, and that's it. What this bill does, it says if you don't want to join the co-op, you don't have to. But you can't disrupt the flow of the bottle bill as mandated by the legislature in that process. So if you don't want to be in the co-op and you don't want to pay your fair share and you want to take your unredeemed nickels and take them and keep them in your own pot, you can do that, but you can't require the retailer to separately sort out your material so you can have a separate pickup system and a separate collection system and a separate processing system at our expense. We taking in containers that we don't even sell, a distributor of that can make us separate their materials and say, you know, we're going to come get them, put them to the side. Now I want you to picture a big vat about three and a half feet by 3.5 feet full of broken glass. It's no bigger. It's not a piece bigger than that. Where the consumers have put every brand of soda or beer that came in there. How much glass do I give back to that distributor who doesn't want to belong? Do I take a 5-gallon bucket and scoop it out? Put it off to the side. It's absolutely ludicrous the expense you go through. This allows them to stay out of the co-op, but they don't get their glass back, they don't get their plastic back, they don't get their aluminum back. And we do exactly what we do today. We hand them an accounting sheet of what goes through that machine, and if you have 100,000 units that ran through our store, you owe us 100,000 nickels. We've already paid those 100,000 nickels out to the general public. So you pay us, and the salvage goes through. You don't have to join. You take your unredeemed nickels and you go about your way. We think this is the best compromise that is there, other than saying you have to join a co-op, which I just don't think is going to be good policy, just to say you have to join. We'll welcome any one of these folks into the co-op under the same terms and conditions that everyone else is paying. My members are a member of the co-op because they're both retailers and distributors. We have store brand pop, Fred Meyer brand. So we are members too. We pay at the store level and we pay at the co-op level. It's just what everybody has to do to make 707 work. I would finish with the fact that this is, just as this is a problem at the store level, it'll be the same problem at the redemption center level, because all we're doing is consolidating bottle rooms, putting three or four together. And we can't have a separate sort for, you know, a group of distributors who just don't want to play. It is absolutely necessary for any further expansion of the bottle bill. This has been a huge impediment to building capacity. We have to have a stream that, if you're going to have a universal requirement on us for collection, which is the law, and we're willing to do, we have to have a universal system behind that in the back room that it all goes. We can't bust it up and have, you know, universal on us, but no universal behind us. And this is the best way we can get to that without forcing people to join a co-op and making it work. Everybody hates the change. I've heard it, and I think some of the folks are rebelling to rebel, and I put in my comments, I'm a preacher's kid, I get that. I could consult on it, but not at the expense of everybody else who's made this system work for you. It's been a miraculous job what's happened in the last 24 months. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll take any questions on.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not a question, it's a comment. I want to underscore what you just said and what Paul just said in terms of what has gone on in the last 2 years under Senate Bill 707. I am, along with Representative Hanna, I think, the person in the legislature who knows what's gone on behind the curtain for 35 years now, and has certainly been well aware of what it would take to do 707, and the state didn't do it, you folks did it. So, sincere congratulations. Coming together, working towards to make this system work. I can't thank you enough, and for one who knows what a meat grinder it is behind there, I just can't congratulate you enough, and Paul and his folks and all the folks who you represent, for coming together and saying, we got to make this work one way or another, so let's get her done. So thank you.
Thank you very much for those comments.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, is there any negotiation between you and the rebels, so to speak? Is there any chance that an agreement could still be found?
We've worked on that for 24 months, and it just doesn't seem to be that middle ground. There's been offers made to buy inventory, to use employees, to consolidate, and quite frankly, the only offer that I've seen is just, we want a special deal, a special rate, you know, a special dispensation. And co-ops don't work that way. You start giving somebody a better rate, well then, why don't you give it to the person, you know, in Grants Pass? Well, if they got a good rate, why not Bend? Everybody has to pull together on this, and it's frustrating for folks. They're good folks. It's a huge change in the law, and there's just that resistance to change. And so short of having them join like everyone else and pulling their weight, this is what we've had to do. Again, we're not going to make them join. It's just, we can't have our back rooms messed up and the system messed up just because someone says no. 707 never happened. I'm not going. Well, it did happen. And we made the changes, and we don't think asking others to make the changes with us is out of line at all. We think that's the fair side of this.
Quick follow-up.
Absolutely.
Has this group been out of this co-op since the very beginning of 707? In other words, they weren't in and then pulled out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Guard, that if memory serves, and maybe I think John Anderson's here today, he may have the right, but I don't think they were ever in. Now, there are more experts behind me in terms of membership, because I don't do any of the membership at OBRC. My members are our members.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you. Mr. Gilliam, I'll defer to Mr. Anderson if you think it's appropriate, but I'm curious about the governance structure at the co-op and how decisions are made, how members of the co-op have access to that decision-making process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I think that's probably is a better question for John. My members were very comfortable with the governance system. None of my members currently sit on the board of OBRC, but I've been very comfortable with how it's been run and the decisions and process made. But John could speak more to that. I don't have day-to-day responsibility there.
Okay.
Further questions? I only have one. Oh, Did I see? Nope, didn't see that. I have just one question, and you know, it comes up as it did a few years ago to expand the bottle bill, and we get those kinds of things. And I look at what you have produced in the system that exists right now, but and it appears to me, because I understand from where we were to where we are now, it's kind of like a leap of a very large leap. It doesn't appear that it's a big leap if we come to the conclusion that there's something else that should be recycled, given the system that exists now, if people are there. Is that a good conclusion, or should I be really cautious about that, too? It was just amazing to me to see what has transpired since 2 years ago.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think I would be cautious with that, because we, in order for more things to be recycled through the system, it's just building capacity.
Okay.
I mean, that's... I like to say it's great science, but it's, you know, it's not. How big's the hose? You know, how much water do you want going through it?
Right.
The obstacle we have right now in terms of this bill is we can't have separate sorts and separate
right.
systems. We need a universal system. We're going to get our first redemption center in Wood Village. That's what's coming. That's what's coming together. We're real excited about that. And we're going to learn some things, because we have not done this before, but there's going to be some mistakes. But that's the system that allows you to have the capacity, because the water bottle addition is about a 40% increase in capacity. So you've kind of hit the store level at, now we're bursting at the seams. We can't do much at store level. So we're going to invest in the redemption center network, and then you're going to have more capacity in terms of what can pass through the system.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Next. Ron Bruce, Pat Bruce, and Ken can come up as well, Pastega, if he would like to, or he'll have his own next time, so whichever way you want to go. You can come with these two or wait and have it the next time.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Pat Bruce, my son Ron Bruce, we're from LeGrand, PepsiCo Bull in Eastern Oregon. I'm the principal owner, and Ron's house is second generation. There's three generations. We started in 1956, and I guess in a way, being called rebels, I'll acquiesce to that. From the standpoint that we have been as independent business people in Eastern Oregon, we've been extremely independent, and we've been extremely efficient in our business, because unlike I-5 corridor, I'll use that, not with respect, there's far more population. The expenses in business can be spread out over population, where in Eastern Oregon, we're faced with minimal population. Consequently, fixed costs impact us greatly. We do participate in recycling. We've invested in excess of $100,000 just in recycling equipment, densifiers. One in LeGrand and one in Ontario. We cover the four most eastern part of Oregon. Olawa County, Union County, Baker County, Malheur County, and of course, border Idaho and Nevada. We are not ignoring legislation. We are trying to survive. We've been recycling products that we contribute to the litter stream, be it cardboard, plastic, and glass, and aluminum, since 1956, since we started in business. We are very, very sensitive to our grocers who, if we don't, in our franchise, part of the competitive nature of the soft drink industry is to keep the back rooms clean. And I would encourage you folks to call one of the grocers over there. I feel that we do an excellent job in policing the waste that I mentioned in the back rooms of his store. Mr. Romaine stated that the bottle bill is unique, and it is very, very unique. But in Oregon, geographically, we cover 18,000 square miles in our franchise area. That is, so as the bottle bill applies, it is very, he's right, it's very, very unique. Like I said, we don't have a concentration of people. And we cover all that territory out of two warehouses. And believe me, it's a chore. But in the case of our customers that generate or do the most volume, we're there with route trucks no less than 2 and 3 days a week, but with pickups and manpower 7 days a week. We're there on Sundays. If we get a call from a grocer, the dirt back room is plugged with anything. I don't care what it is. If it's bottles without deposit or cans without deposit, which we do get, we pick them up. We pick them up. That's just a so we have a system. The short of the long of it is we have a system in place now that does not preclude us from negotiating with Mr. Anderson and OBRC. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. We have a very, very efficient system in place right now where we are actually a collection site for two other distributors besides ourselves. And they're not soft drink distributors. They're beer distributors. And what these bills have done is positive in the sense that in our franchise area, it has brought beer and soft drink people together with, forgetting competition, because some of those beer distributors handle some of the products we're talking about. We're processing those. We're forgetting competition. We're concentrating on the problem at hand. We are actually helping them recycle their product. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you. And I let my son talk.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much for listening to our testimony.
Don't forget to give your name, right?
Ron Bruce. Sorry, I'm a little nervous.
No problem.
Ron Bruce from LeGrand in Ontario, Oregon. You got a little bit of a background. I'm going to hit a little bit on some stuff that my father talked about. Regards to Bill 707, 26 years ago, I was pretty young, little guy, and that's when we bought our first densifiers. If you don't know what that is, it's a compactor to crush cans and bottles. And we would throw a bag of cans in that one of the gentlemen's talked about from the back rooms that produces 400 cans and do a little biscuit about like that. We've been doing that, like I stated, since about 26 years ago. Since then, we have purchased two Excel machines that do plastic and aluminum. And we have a cardboard compactor as well. And those machines are in excess of over $100,000 now. So we employ a couple people, individuals, who take care of this problem after our trucks pick all this dunnage up from the back room of stores. As Mr. Bruce stated, we have in excess of 50 plus pieces of machinery, rolling stock, running down the road right now between Malheur, Baker, Union, and Wallowa counties, as well as Pendleton, Gilliam County, between the beer distributors and ourselves, who collectively pick up the dunnage, and we warehouse that, and we process all this material. We do this in every account that we service. That's on-premise accounts, as well as your big store accounts. We take care of all this material. We always have. We're here because we're having a hard time believing that we should join a cooperative from the west side of the state to the east side. Geographically, we understand the I-5 corridor and the volume that the west side of the state produces with return containers, deposit containers. In the east side, we have a total of 80,000 people in our population base in four counties. And that right now is dwindling. Giving you that little fact, I'm going to try to make this short. Being at these accounts every day, you can see the miles that we travel in our trucks, servicing our accounts best that we can. Our business is a very service-oriented company. So given that fact that we're here, most accounts, 7 days a week, we don't see it viable to add more trucks and diesel vehicles to this geographical region. We're talking about Eastern Oregon. And we're trying to watch the environment and our carbon footprint over in that area and do the best we can. About all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank
Members
you.
Members of the board would be happy to answer any questions if we can.
Representative Berger.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you. I think you've kind of given folks here a look behind the meat grinder of what's gone on in the bottle bill and what it's meant for you as independent business people over on the other side of the mountain. And I really appreciate that you, all these years, have been doing the bottle bill, as have your grocers. And people who redeem things don't realize all that's going on and somebody's doing it. So thank you very much for that. My question for you is this. What we're trying to get to here is a redemption center outside the grocers. Okay? I think that's where we're on a path to try and sort of get out of the grocery back rooms or the grocer exchange redemption system. Have you looked, since you seem to be carrying all this in two, Ontario, you mentioned Ontario and LeGrand, have you looked at what a redemption center would look like in those communities and whether they'd work for you at all?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, and I'm addressing Representative
Berger.
Don't worry, just talk. Okay, we don't bite.
I don't want to be ejected. Yes, we have. In fact, our general manager, Eric Yunt, has been in contact with the OLCC, and we've gotten, we've submitted, we haven't got, we've asked for what it would take to qualify. The OLCC is not to that point yet. But all of our group, the distributors that are organized, beer and soft drink, are willing to purchase reverse vending machines from Invipco, who Annette Smalley is here, represents.
Mm-hmm.
We will do that. How would we do that? I'm going to speak a little bit out of turn here in that it would have to be approved by the group as a whole, but in LeGrand, Our building, Pepsi-Cola Eastern Oregon building, is centrally located. It's
Ontario's right on the border.
Ontario's is right on the Uteri Boulevard. It's the old Ford New Holland building, which would be centrally located. We would the group in agreement would assume that expense.
Representative Berger.
Can I follow up? If you're looking at this realistically on your own, why wouldn't you be equally looking at doing it as part of the state cooperative? I mean, because you're going to have to come together with some pretty cooperative stuff to get there. So why do you object, I guess, to being part of a bigger cooperative? Mm-hmm. I guess is what I'm getting at.
You ask and I'll tell you.
Go ahead. I mean, that's what this hearing is about.
With all respect, due respect. Okay. Mr. Anderson sent out a proposal. I sat down and I'm speaking for myself. I sat down and read that proposal. I can't afford it. I cannot afford to pay. And it's a little bit nebulous because it's hard to interpret. There's supposed to be there's a charge per container. There's a charge pickup fee to pick up. And remember, we're already doing this in our own business. We're already doing it. And my interpretation of what he sent me, I can't afford it. I cannot afford to do that per case.
That's an honest answer, sir, and I thank you.
Good, honest answer.
That's an honest answer. I mean, you don't have to. If your analysis is that you think it's too rich for your blood,
right.
For what? Okay, I don't want to pursue this because other people might have questions. But I asked you a direct question, and I think you gave me a direct answer, and that's all I asked for.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. Thank you.
Did you want to make a comment? Go ahead.
I would, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Romaine claimed this was about money. And that's very true. And just to give you a little fact, our Ontario franchise, we're over 100% on containers coming in from Idaho. So that being said, there's no loss of nickels there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. People of the board.
Other questions? Yes, Representative Hannah. Oh, hold it. One more question.
You can imagine for me this is difficult to sit and listen to on a number of fronts, and I want to be very careful and respectful because I'm in the business, and you know that, and
yes.
I know the business you do, and I can't tell you how heartwarming it is to see you here because you're involving, and I tell people all the time we have to get involved. You're here. Also that you've been in the business since 56. You're 3 years ahead of us. I mean, so I'm proud of our business, and I think there's a number of people in this room that represent that kind of business. You mentioned that you've looked at a redemption center. Help us understand if you did that redemption center and had cooperation among others in your regions. How would you treat the folks who are currently OBRC members?
They can do it. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, we actually have, we've talked about that. We produced a model we believe is much more viable for everybody that has to do with the bottle bill. I hope each one of you got that. There's written testimony about that. So we believe that we could do a lot better job and be part of the solution. As we were talked about being rebels earlier, part of the solution instead of part of the problem. So I hope that.
Okay, that's fair. I have a follow-up.
Follow-up, yeah.
So you mentioned over-redemption. Keep in mind, I'm in a franchise area that's small in terms of volume and population, large in terms of distance, and I've had the over-redemption issue as well because, for me, it's strictly been there's a Costco in Medford, there's a Costco in Eugene. People leave and buy the containers and bring them back. So to the point that I always over-redeemed since the advent of Costco anyway, and I want to be clear with everybody, I am an OBRC member, so I want to make that clear and on the record. Because of the leveling of redemption within the region, of course, I don't over-redeem anymore. And would that not apply for you specifically, and maybe even more so in the border areas, where I know in the Coke system, and I believe also in the Pepsi system, they're using a separate UPC, and you could prevent some of that redemption?
For three brands, sorry, Mr. Chair.
No problem.
For three brands only, Pepsi, Diet, and Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
The rest of them, no, they are not. Yeah. They're the same can. We get those back.
But follow up.
Sure. Yes.
And I'm just hoping you've looked at, I mean, I don't know your business. I do know mine. If it was Classic Coke, Dr. Pepper, and Diet Coke, it'd be a pretty large chunk. so I'm thinking Pepsi, Diet, and Dew would be a fairly large chunk in your most prolific packages. Does that change the model for you if you reduced over-redemption?
Well,
those are already being processed.
Yeah, we're processing those already. So after we process all the aluminum, we can hold and hold that to gain some value back from aluminum scrap. Great.
Mr. Chair, if I can address Mr. Hanna, Representative Hanna.
Bruce.
You know, I would pose this. I don't know if we can exist together with OBRC. Now, I feel that we're far more efficient. Our recycling program is far more efficient, and we provide a far more meticulous system of picking up than OBRC does right now. We cover 100% of the accounts on-premise, gas and convenience, grocery store, everything, whereas I don't think OBRC can, not because of the lack of manpower. So if you know the way I see it, they're welcome to keep, you know, we're not opposing OBRC. They can work with us, or we can work with them, or we can work side by side.
Great, thanks.
Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bruce, which is both of you, which is kind of nice. Is there anything that could be reconciled in this bill that would enable you to change your opinion? Is there anything that could be changed in the bill that would make you say the bill's okay?
Well, the way I see the bill being written, in reality, they want a redemption. They want a the bill wants a distributor cooperative to pick up salvage for the whole state. I don't think that's realistic because of the geographical expanse of Eastern Oregon. We cover 18,000 square miles over there in our franchise alone. So, you know, logistically, that would be for one cooperative to cover that. I don't think that's realistic. So if you were to have a system where there was more than just one, you know, that would be far more equitable from a
business standpoint. And I think it would be far more, and as Mr. Romain pointed out, we have a unique situation in Oregon. It is unique. But I think you have enough participants, willing participants, who would, you know, make up the complexion of the recycle business as it is, that could come together on the east side, and southern Oregon, and the very northwest corner. I mean, you've got willing participants who would be a distributor cooperative that could solve the situation. It's already, well.
Can I add to that? I also read the bill as that we would have to join a cooperative on this side of the state, and that's a little scary to us, the way I read the bill.
Yeah, and I
there is an amendment, I think.
That, well, even without that amendment, I think you don't have to join, but what would happen is you'd be giving up bottles that are redeemed. You wouldn't get anything back for those, and you would be expected to get the nickels in. So you could be outside of it, but you would be losing some of the product
and
salvage, which I know is part of your business plan. So, the question that I have is, right now over in the eastern side, who's picking up all the water bottles and the other things that don't have a distributor available to them? Because they come from all sorts of places.
Mr. Chair, in our franchise, we do a lot of picking up of the water bottles outside of three stores, Albertsons, Safeway, Walmart. Even those stores, sometimes we're called and we come and we pick those up for the stores as it is right now.
And how does the nickel follow back? Because it certainly didn't get to you in any way.
It depends. Sometimes a store calls us and says, hey, we have to have these out of the back room. They're not being picked up. Will you please pick them up? We'll pick them up, throw them in the truck just to clean the back room up.
But I'm wondering about how that grocery store then gets nickels back that they've paid out to that customer who brought them back.
If I may, I believe that on the reverse vendors, there's a bill on that goes straight to OBRC.
So OBRC would be paying for it?
I believe so. We're not privy to a lot of that information.
That Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, I appreciate your participation in this hearing. I'd like to go back to your previous answer, Mr. Bruce, regarding the alternative you suggested in terms of developing essentially a regional co-op as opposed to a statewide co-op. I mean, frankly, from a scale perspective, I'm not sure that really makes much of a difference. I mean, presumably, the statewide co-op would have regional redemption centers. So I'm trying to figure out why that model doesn't fit. I mean, if you're arguing that a regional redemption center would work, a regional co-op would work, but a statewide co-op would not, what are the differences in those two models that would dictate one over the other? I mean, to my mind, they're essentially the same. It all depends on how the statewide co-op is structured.
Well, Mr. Chair, right now, Representative Edwards, right now, you know, I don't want to be confrontational. The system that OBRC has is not working in Eastern Oregon. It's not. As far as picking up salvage, mm-hmm. It doesn't work. So, then why would then a redemption center work when you have, how can OBRC make a redemption center work in Eastern Oregon? We're already there. We're there. We have trucks on the road. We can man the redemption center. We can pick up the salvage from the redemption center. You don't increase the carbon footprint. You don't increase the amount of trucks on the road. You already have the trucks on the road. You already got the manpower in place. And then, like I said, on top of the fact that we're picking up a lot of what OBRC is supposed to be picking up right now, mm-hmm. as is the other beer distributors.
Okay, and so to that point, what you described is then a regional cooperative. You're already working with some other distributors who are outside OBRC. Okay. Presumably, you would offload some costs because OBRC would pick up items that you're not currently picking up, and you would try to structure your activities so that they wouldn't overlap or duplicate what OBRC is doing. So there would be costs that you would no longer be paying, and then there would be the over-redemption issue that you wouldn't have to deal with as well. So I'm trying to figure out, can you explain, I don't need to know the exact number, but how does the math work on that? I mean, how much more do you think you would be paying on percentage terms by participating in the co-op, or based on this bill, basically following?
How much more would my company pay OBRC to participate? Yeah. The way I interpret the bill,
just based on your business model.
the proposal we got was $1.05 per container. Uh-huh. So that's about 36 cents somewhere in there.
A case. That'd be a case.
Then as I understand it, we got to pay a month ahead all deposits. Mm-hmm. All deposits a month ahead on everything we sell. So we got to open up our books and to OBRC. And how am I going to get that money back? As a business person, how am I going to get that money back? To my knowledge, from the people I talk to, you might get it back. You may get it back, depending upon where the who does the auditing. I know that the distributor in Pendleton. And has tried to ask for transparency, and they've tried to have OBRC explain this to us, and we haven't got an answer. But what we did do, positively, we made a proposal to OBRC, essentially, and maybe Ronald can explain it better, but where we could be an arm, if you will, of OBRC in Eastern Oregon. Now they say that's a special concession. I don't think it's a special concession when we've been doing this since 1956. And we've been participating in aluminum since late 60s and plastic since, we were doing it long before OBRC even existed. So, it's not that, like I said at the outset, we're willing to negotiate, mm-hmm. but certainly we don't want to go broke in the negotiations.
Can I answer that? A distributor, I can't really speak for him because he's not here. I can't give you the exact numbers, but they started redeeming their own salvage again, mm-hmm. and they came up with an additional $75,000 in 1 year. If that gives you a little hint of part of that.
Gives me some sense of the magnitude of the issue.
Yeah, it's huge.
Okay. I see no more questions. Thank you very much, and I appreciate you coming over and also being willing to answer the questions. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Members of the board.
Just to find out.
So next, we have Ken Pastega. And did you want anybody else to come up with you, Ken?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
Chairman and board,
I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to speak here. They wrote down Kenny there, and the only one that's allowed to call me Kenny was my mother. Anyway, our family has been in the Pepsi-Cola business since 1948, and my dad, who's 93, still works every day. And he's sharp as a tack, kind of scary, but I guess that's good for my genes. But anyway, we service five counties in Oregon, Jackson, Josephine, Benton, Lynn, Tillamook, and also part of Pope County. Now, it's kind of a concern for me because I look at this and I look at whenever was there an association that had legislation to force people to belong through their organization regardless of what they do for a living. This is kind of, I think, stepping out of the boundaries. But as it relates to OBRC, I think they have a good model in parts of the state. And I think our concern was from the start of OBRC, we weren't able to participate, to understand how the organization was run. We were given a presentation with a short window of time to become a member. And then after the OBRC was in place, myself and Mr. Van Dusen, who's going to speak after me, made a trip to Portland to discuss some kind of a solution with OBRC at their board meeting. At their board meeting, we made a list. We offered up some options that we thought were solutions, and basically their chairman, Dick Lytle, said that was not a option, and the organization was in place, and if we wanted to participate, it was their way or no other way. Well, we're an Italian family, and that doesn't go down so well.
Ken, I forgot to make sure that you pronounced your whole name for the record. So
Ken Pastega.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, so we've even had dialogue with people from OBRC this week. We're willing to look at a solution, but not a solution that is a financial burden to our company. Their first proposal to us would reduce our employees by 12%. Okay. We pay good wages and excellent benefits with health insurance and everything. And we've never laid off an individual in our business history because of economic conditions. We just hang in there, and normally they come back. Our customers are getting 100% of their redemption for any container that goes out of our location because we are billed for that by the grocer, or it's deducted from their bill, and the consumer and the grocer is made whole 100% of everything that comes in and goes out, and we have California bordering in Jackson County, and we also have the coast, Tillamook County, which has a lot of seasonal tourism, and we pick up all the redemption there regardless. If it's over-redeemed or under-redeemed or whatever, 100% of our stuff is, our containers that we sell are picked up, including the consumers that come in with product from the Portland market. We invested in recycling when the bottle bill was written, and we have learned to work with it. And we have two locations that process all of our redeemed product. Medford and Corvallis. In Medford, we built a building in 1998, a new building, and we added 10,000 square feet to process recycling. We put in all the equipment. Now, some of the other members of OBRC they didn't want to invest in handling the containers individually and to deal with it in their own warehouse, and that's why Crank, which later became OBRC, that's why it was put together, that they didn't have to take up their warehouse space or they didn't have to deal with the containers coming in and out. Well, we chose to participate in it and to take care of all of our own containers. And we service those stores that redeem the containers 2-3 times a week and pick up our containers, and the machines sort them so there's no bag or box that somebody has to throw it in. The consumer goes and puts it in the recycling machine. It's smashed, and we get beer containers, whatever, but we get whatever Pepsi-Cola products that were redeemed through the machine, because it's all managed by the UPC codes. So we've invested in that. And I think if we would have been more closely involved in the structure of OBRC, we'd probably be more positive about participating in OBRC. And I think the thing that's hard for us to deal with is our business model of distribution and picking up all the containers isn't going to change much. So to remain whole on the loss in revenue, we'd have to reduce our headcount, and we couldn't reduce enough to justify it, because we still have to have that consistent service to our customers where our trucks are delivering. And right now, it's a very efficient system. They deliver, they pick up at the same time, instead of two different trucks coming to each location. But we feel that we still want to, the Oregon Bottle Bill has been an excellent thing for the cleanliness of the state. It's far better than any state in the union. It's a model, and I think that there could be a solution between OBRC and some of us independent distributors if we could sit down together and just discuss it. We have had dialogue, but the dialogue has never been able to, at this point in time, to find a solution. And that's about all I have to add to this. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Any questions? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're the second person to mention that your business model is sufficiently different from OBRC members such that the model just doesn't work for you. What exactly is different about your business model that dictates that outcome? Aren't there other OBRC members who have similar business models that had to adjust?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Edwards, our business model is different that, like I mentioned earlier, is we chose to be involved in recycling. We invested in equipment and trucks and personnel, and they chose not to. They chose to be part of a cooperative that their trucks didn't pick up any of the containers, and their trucks did not, and I can reference my competitors, chose to be involved in a cooperative that basically another truck picked up the recycled items, and another individual in the location processed it. We did all those things internally, so that's the difference between my competitors that belong to OBRC and myself.
Well, thanks for that explanation.
Thank you.
Secondly, you mentioned that you're still open to negotiating with the co-op, but according to Mr. Gilliam's testimony, you've already been in dialogue for almost 2 years now. What makes you think that there's a solution on the horizon when you haven't reached one in the last 2 years?
Well, just recently, there has been dialogue that there could be a solution, and we've also considered putting up our own redemption centers. Our redemption center is a model one that we could look at to see what a redemption center was like outside of the Portland market. Everybody doesn't live in Portland. Mm-hmm. And even though it kind of controls the state a little bit, but there's some of these smaller counties out there that, and in Corvallis especially, it's so recycling conscious that we could put a model in our own franchise and fund it independently.
And I have one question. You have a very wide range, so we can go either place or out to the coast. And I guess my question is, there's a whole lot of water bottles and other kind of things out there that are not part of what you do. Mm-hmm. What happens with those now?
Well, right now, OBRC has done an excellent job of involving each manufacturer to be part of their association. And so if a Arrowhead bottle, which isn't marketed, or it's marketed in Oregon but not manufactured in Oregon, comes in, it goes to Fred Meyer's or Safeway, one of the major customers, that container's UPC code goes through the OBR system, and they are charged for those deposits. So the customer is always whole. Okay.
And then they recycle it. Mm-hmm. So, but what happens with, then, in your recycling system, they put an Arrow bottle in, what happens there?
Well, right now, if we set up our, are you talking about setting up our own?
No, I just, no.
In our system, it goes through the grocer's machine, and it goes into the same bag as our products, but it is charged back to that business or to Arrowhead. It's charged directly back to them.
So then it would be in your bag.
It could be in my bag.
So then you'd recycle it.
Yes.
And take care of that. And
exactly.
Have the possibility
mm-hmm.
of getting some of that recycling, whatever. Okay. And would that be true of any other product? So your Pepsi, Coke.
Pepsi.
But Coke could put it in the same machine.
Yeah, if the Coke container, what the store does is it takes all the containers, but it sorts the equipment, sorts, does a printout that says these are Pepsi-Cola sold products. It doesn't make any difference what's in the bag, but there might be 400 in there. So whatever our amount of containers that were redeemed at the store, they just give us a bag of 400. Doesn't make any difference what's in there. So there, it could be 400 containers of a multiple of brands.
But each of the other distributors would get charged for the money, but the recycling would be your responsibility.
For the containers in that were returned to me,
gotcha.
Yes, that the store was charged for. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Questions?
I know there's a couple others that already said they had to go. Yes. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank
just
you.
Thanks. Ken, what I heard Representative Roblin ask, and maybe I misunderstood, but this will be clarifying. If you opened your own redemption center, right, what would happen to the containers that are produced in another state and marketed directly through our state, i.e. Arrowhead, Nestle, those kind of things? How would you deal with that?
What we'd like to do is, if we had that model and we put it up, what we'd like to do is somehow participate with OBRC, and those containers we would go to OBRC and say, we would like the nickels back from those containers that we redeemed. But we feel by being local, and maybe this model would be outside of the Portland area, we could try it and see what kind of effect it had in our own community. We've sat down, and my dad and myself, and discussed this, buying the equipment, investing in it, and just seeing what happened. And if we could get some kind of a relationship with OBRC to make us whole on the nickels that we didn't charge the consumer for.
So just to follow up. So I just want to be clear, and I'm not picking at this, but currently the only system that has contracted to outside producer distributors is not individual bottlers, it is OBRC.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chairman. Yep. Appreciate it.
Yep. Next on the list would be Willis Van Dusen and Representative Witt, if you'd like to. I don't know if you were planning on coming up or not.
Yes, in this, I'm deaf in this here. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate it. Good afternoon. I am Willis Van Dusen. I'm a Dr. Pepper bottler from Astoria, Oregon, and it's my privilege to be here today. I said I'm a Dr. Pepper bottler because Mr. Hanna and my dad were Dr. Pepper bottlers together. We had different colas, but we were Dr. Pepper bottlers. It's my privilege to be here, and for the record, I'm also an elected official. Just so you know, I've completed my 20th year as the mayor of Astoria, and I've been on the city council for 25 years, so I really appreciate your willingness to serve and serve the state. It's a tough job, and I appreciate your work. One comment I'd like to make to Representative Berger is, I don't know if you've heard other bottlers state that if it wasn't for the bottle bill in 1972, we would not be in business. It would have put us out of business. It would have put us out of business without the bottle bill. And the reason is, we were a producer, which we still are through a co-op, but we produced in Astoria, and our competition, well, I'm not going to use my fellow friend here, but if Craigmont or whatever, or Shasta, wanted to produce a returnable bottle and come just drive a big semi through Astoria and leave it, they could just take off. But when the bottle bill came in, no, they had to service the store. They had to come back and get their container. And it eliminated a lot of out-of-state and out-of-town competition, unfair competition, in my humble opinion. But anyway, if it wasn't for the Oregon bottle bill, Van Dusen Beverages would not be in business today. So I thank you for that.
Thank you.
I've got a lot better arguments than any of these guys that you heard. But I just want to get, I think what we should do is, we need, I think we can come to an agreement with OBRC. I'd like to state that everything that Mr. Romaine has said is absolutely true. It may not be true for my particular area, but what he said is absolutely true. Mr. Anderson from OBRC has been extremely cooperative, and anything that we have asked for from Astoria, he has done. I don't think there's any question that there is room. He has already, when Mr. Pastegas stated the time that that he and I went to the OBRC board, what we were told is, this is the plan, this is what every cooperative bottler distributor signed up for. To be fair, this is what you were going to have. It was not a fun meeting. Okay, since then, Mr. Anderson has changed his plan. Since the OBRC has run for a short amount of time, and John, if you're back there, if I say this wrong, tell me, but there would no longer be a handling fee that the non-redeemed deposits and the recycling fees, should I not say that, John? But anyway, there has been some movement because of what we've learned in the first year. There definitely has. Now you might be asking, why didn't Astoria join? Why didn't Van Dusen Beverages join? I mean, it's a very good question. In Astoria, we do not have any of the nickels that Mr. Romaine talked about. We're the smallest bottler here that you're going to talk with. We don't have a Walmart. We don't have an Albertsons. We don't have a Cub Food. We don't have an AMPM. But we've got the 4th of July at the beach, and everybody buys everything at Walmart. They come across the bridge, and they leave their containers there, and we over-redeem. But we went out and we bought a $100,000. $100,000 is a lot for our size. And you know that. Anyway, and we bought that machine after this latest version was passed. And it was bought to condense and be able to recycle plastic water bottles. That's the only reason we bought it. And we have two employees, and their names are Pat O'Brien and Thor Norgard, who are Teamsters, members of Local 58, full-time employees with pension, with health and welfare. And two employees is not a lot, but with only 10,000 people. If we had 100,000 people, that'd be 20 employees. If we had 500,000 like Portland, that's 100 employees. And if there was 100 Teamsters being laid off in Portland, there'd be more people here than just me in my Suzuki. So it means a lot to Astoria. It truly does. I wrote my notes down here when we were talking about it. We're not a free rider. We're not getting any of those unredeemed nickels in Astoria. Oh, my redemption center. That's what I was going to talk about. To be honest, with my work as the mayor, we have worked a plan. We've thought about a plan. Our little town of Astoria has lost our Chevrolet dealership. We've lost our Toyota dealership. We've lost our Pontiac dealership. And those are three separate businesses. But the one, the Toyota dealership, I'm working with the Chamber of Commerce, and we would have to work with OBRC. and I don't have any problem working with OBRC, the Chamber of Commerce and our garbage company, Western Oregon Waste. And the way we envision it is, see, people don't like sitting there in those dirty machines. They just hate it. I hate it too. But anyway, they can drive through a drive-thru, and if they want their money, we would provide it for them. We would prefer they just say, here's my bag of cans. We'll have five charities for them. You can go to the food bank. It can go to the troops overseas. It could go to the high school athletic programs, or our aquatic centers in trouble, or the aquatic centers. And those could change. And then they would be able to recycle. They wouldn't have to just throw their nickel in the garbage. We would have a full-time employee. We would have a reverse vending machines. And it would be a true recycling center. So that's an idea we have. But if this law passes, all these things are gone. I mean, it would not be possible. So I think we need some chance to talk about it. Okay. Wait a minute. Do you want to say anything, Brad?
I would defer to the chairman.
Okay, I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman.
Would you like to? We'll let you both talk before we ask questions.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brad Witt, House District 31. I'm here today to support my good friend and constituent, Mayor Willis Van Dusen, and his brother Dan. As I read this bill, it has the appearance to me, and I haven't had the advantage of giving it an in-depth review, but it at least has the feel that we're setting up an oligopoly for beverage container recycling. And that's not to say that that's a bad thing. And in fact, the purpose to which this bill is written is admirable. Every bit as admirable as the business that the Van Dusens conduct in the Astoria area. The problem with measures that restrain trade is that it's not a problem until it disadvantages somebody. And in this instance, I've seen where it has the appearance that this bill would disadvantage not only Van Dusen Beverage Company, but several of the other independents. With that said, this bill does try and accomplish very admirable ends. Mr. Van Dusen and his brother have tried, and I think have been successful in cooperating with others in the industry to accomplish common ends. We have a hitch here, and this bill doesn't help. I think we have folks with the best of intents, with some very good minds, who collectively could find a solution to this, if perhaps given a formalized opportunity. Senator Johnson and I have talked. We would like to be able to see an accommodation made here. Certainly, we support what the bill is trying to accomplish. We just don't want to see our constituents and others in the state disadvantaged. What Senator Johnson and I have talked about is the possibility of an Oregon solutions approach to overcoming this hitch. Maybe I'm naive, Mr. Chairman, but I truly believe that there's the possibility of reaching an agreement here that serves the best interests of all parties at stake. And with that, I'll leave it at that. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Questions for either of these people?
No, but allow me to thank the mayor for his kind remarks and to assure him that the homegrown Oregon distributors at the time of the bottle bill were there for it. It was the trucking bringing it in from outside that started it in the first place.
That's
and yours
exactly
is a,
right.
is a very affirming story to me. And thank you for
thank
telling
you.
Me.
And I both want to thank both of you for being here. I mean, the only way we make good policy is to hear from people, and
I appreciate it. You know, I was anticipating a question from Mr. Edwards. He didn't ask me. But may I answer the question?
May I ask a hypothetical question? Yeah. If I were to ask a question,
no,
that's what I asked.
I really was anticipating the question. How does your market, how does your business differ from others that are members of OBRC? Well, when that was in Astoria, in our geographic area, which is only Clatsop County, there is no longer a Coca-Cola employee that lives in Clatsop County. And Columbia Beverages and Mount Hood, their distribution bases are in Portland. There is no warehouse, there is no office, and so there is no local presence. We had this local presence. We were doing the recycling. We did buy this huge piece of equipment after the last piece was passed. So thank you for asking the question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
No free Coke and no Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, when I go to his office.
Okay, next we have John Anderson. Barry Featherstone, you want to both come up at the same time? Sure, that'd be great.
Are you deaf in any ears?
No, I'm good.
Hey, thank you, buddy.
Shall I go first?
Okay, John. Either one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Anderson, and I'm president of Oregon Beverage Recycling Co-op. I'm sure you've heard my name by now. It was mentioned many times. And I just want to say, after hearing some of these folks that I think I know well, after a year and a half at least, of meeting them and learning about their business, I have a great deal of respect for them, and I do understand the challenges that they face in their particular geographic markets, and I appreciate the concerns that they have with the co-op. And my interest today was really to talk about a potential amendment and not so much the bill, out of respect for them and understanding that they have a concern that they are being forced into something. So I'd certainly be willing to answer any questions about how OBRC operates, anything that you might have heard and wondered how it works. I would definitely do that. But I'd ask Barry Featherstone to join me here today, and he was gracious enough to make a flight change at the last minute so he could be here, because about 18 months ago now, when we first conceived the idea of OBRC, so it took us a little while after the passage of Senate Bill 707 to figure out, okay, how are we going to do this? How does it work? So about 18 months ago, when we first conceived this, I attended a meeting in Pendleton that was full of concerned distributors, and some were very gracious and some were not so gracious. Barry was one that was not so gracious. He was demanding and
demanding's a good word.
Demanding of me, and what requirements would need to be met in order for him to be a part of the co-op. So I think that Barry is probably a good spokesperson for what myself and the fellow board members and co-op members have done in order to accommodate a group that does have concerns. So if it's okay, I'd like to turn it over to Barry and let him speak for himself.
You can speak about the amendment if you want. As well, if there is an amendment that you would like to talk about.
Can I mention it?
Sure. Yeah, I think we'll talk about another one later, too.
Okay.
Just getting everything on the table so people know what's out there, I think, is important. So I would love to have you talk about
that. Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that. So the amendment I refer to is the dash one that talks about a reporting requirement for beverage container redemption rates. And I... one of the things that we talked about, not I don't think in this committee, but in the House Energy and Environment Committee in the past regarding redemption rates, was that the co-op, everyone coming together, reporting and pooling their deposits, and then the central refunding of those to retailers would eventually allow us to finally report statewide redemption rates. And I know there was some skepticism when we were talking with folks about our willingness to be open and transparent with that number or with those numbers. So I just wanted to voice my support for the Dash 1 amendment and let you folks know that we are committed to making this work. We don't want to be seen as a non-transparent industry group that's trying to hide something. We want to be upfront and open with what's happening in the bottle bill. So we like this amendment. We think that it's the right thing for the state and it's the right thing for the industry. And if it does pass, we'll be excited about finally putting out the redemption rates, which in that we represent about 95% of what's sold and collected around the state should be fairly accurate representations. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Barry Featherstone. I live in Pendleton, Oregon. We service five counties of Eastern Oregon, Morrow, Umatilla, Union, Baker, and Wallowa counties. It accounts for approximately 28,000 square miles of territory. We run from basically Boardman to Baker, all the way up into the Omnaha, Hell's Canyon, as far south as Ukiah, Heppner. So it's all over the map. We drive just as many, if not more, miles as the others because we're a multi-brand house, which means we're not Pepsi, we're not Coke, we're not Budweiser, but everything else that Safeway wants is what we carry. So we have over 2,000 SKUs of products. We account for 1% of all of the beer and wine that's sold in the state of Oregon. So if you think about it, we cover 20% of the land mass and we account for 1% of the sales. So I have the same problems that the Bruces do in LeGrand. In fact, my territory covers theirs and a little bit more. I have very similar problems to the Pastegas in their territories because I come from a rural area. These are very emotional hearings because it involves families. They're all family-owned businesses. We've been in business since 1955. Jay Graybill, my father-in-law, started the business. We've been working over there for 55 years at this point in time. This April 1st is when we started. We employ 42 people. I'm sure that the numbers are proportional to the other businesses over there, depending upon the volume that they sell. And this is a volume issue. It's a volume issue for us. It's a volume issue for the state. I have some emotional testimony, but I want to deal with some facts up front, and then I'll become emotional later on as I counter some of my other distributors' comments. There's really four things that you need to think of. Your job is to think about policy, and it's not to think about today and the problems that Graybill Distributing has. It's to think about the state and where it's supposed to be 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road. So there's really four things that you need to consider in this. The first is the bottle bill ever going to expand, again, to include, say, Gatorade bottles or energy drinks and things of that nature? If the answer to that is yes, it's going to expand, then this bill is a requirement. Because as you add more things to it, it becomes a larger and larger problem for everybody. So if everyone's not involved in the solution, even if you got 5% from Eastern Oregon that are fighting back, you won't solve the problems that the citizens experience. The next issue is if you believe that an environmentalist is going to come before some committee at some point and say, hey, you know what? If we raise the deposit from a nickel to a dime, instead of the state being redeemed at X percent, it's going to be X plus one or X plus two. This bill needs to go through because as the deposits go up, the fraud level goes up and the dollar stake goes up. So if everybody's not bought off on this, someone's going to lose, and it's going to be the 95% that are burdening most of the loss. If you think that we need redemption centers, if you think that there's even going to be one redemption center someplace in Oregon, then this bill is a must because it'll be the OVRC who puts it together. I agree
that the Bruces could put together a redemption center at their Pepsi plant. That's right, a Pepsi plant in Le Grand, and they could put one up in Ontario. How many people that buy Coca-Cola are going to know that there's a redemption center at a Pepsi plant? Or when they walk in and they see it, they're going to go, oh, and then turn around and walk out. These redemption centers need to be centralized locations with a standard brand that the consumer, okay, think about the consumer, the citizen, the people you represent, they need to see a common sign and say, that's where I can go. And it needs to be advertised across the state. So do you think that the people in Eastern Oregon are going to run statewide television ads to let someone know that if they're vacationing over there in their house, let's say they're from Salem and they own something up in the Blue Mountains and they go over there hunting, that they can drive it in Le Grand to the Pepsi store and return their bottles there instead of having to haul them empty all the way back? I don't think so. I think all those containers would be buried in the woods. The fourth issue is today and for the last 30 years, this has not cost the citizens of this state a penny. They pay their nickel, they get it back. They participate. If we have holdouts and we have people that say, oh, I don't want to be in here for this reason, that reason, eventually the citizens are going to have to pay one way or the other because a limited number of people can't burden the whole cost without driving more expense into it, which, if nothing else, will raise the cost of the product. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're only going to get 9 cents back of the dime they give. It means that someone's going to raise the cost of the product to cover the cost that they're incurring. Those four things are why this bill needs to pass. All the rest of it is emotional testimony. All the rest of it is my family's perception of how they will either gain or lose from this. But those four things, those are the answers that you have to, or the questions that you have to answer. And that's it. We became a member at Grayville Distributing for one reason. We thought it was the right thing to do. We knew it was going to cost us more money. Someone asked, how much more? It's 15 to 20% more. Okay, so my cost this past year went up 30%. The OBRC at the end of the year looked at it. I got that money, the excess money back, because it's a co-op, and so I got a patronage fee that would be paid back to me. So I get that extra money paid back. We looked at the cost. We lowered the fees approximately 10% across the board for aluminum, plastic, and glass. We changed the business model so that it requires less cash. If the people in Eastern Oregon would all join, I estimate, and I should know because I'm also an OBRC board member and I'm the head of the audit committee, I believe that the costs in Eastern Oregon would actually go down approximately 20% based upon the economies of scale that we would get, that we would gain by having all those people be members. The arguments of, well, it will create a larger carbon footprint. You know what? I don't think so. I drive the same routes. My trucks leave my warehouse full now instead of three quarters full. Because if you're picking up all your own stuff, you can't fill the truck all the way up, or when you get to the first stop, you don't necessarily have room to put the empties on there. So my trucks go out full. We only run what they call the branch. So we leave Pendleton, drive Le Grand, leave Le Grand, go through Elgin all the way up. We go all the way up to Omnaha, and we come back. We do it 3 days a week now instead of four. So if you ask me, I'm better off. My costs have actually gone down when it comes to the mileage tax I pay. I know you don't want to hear that, but I pay less in mileage tax today than I did before. Okay? So I don't agree with all of the arguments from that perspective. John was right. When I heard about the OBRC, I didn't like it. I knew my costs were going up. I'm a CFO by trade. I'm like, yeah, this isn't a good deal. We said, if we're going to participate, we want representation for Zone 5, Eastern Oregon, because that wasn't there, and we were right. You know, I heard people say about East Side, West Side, that's crap. We're all Oregonians. We happen to live in different spots. But we did want representation for a very large land mass, very few people of the state. So John and the other board members agreed that there would be a Zone 5 board member that is self-elected over there. So 2 months after the OBRC started, got a phone call from John that said the board had agreed that there should be a Zone 5 board member. There's myself and Swire Coca-Cola are the only two distributors over there. We flipped the coin. Neither one of us really wanted to do it. I lost, so I'm the board member. So there is representation. This is a co-op. I've read all of the hate mail and all the letters and all of the proposals that have come across, and by and large, most of them are things that aren't reasonable. Okay, they're asking for things that go against the laws that govern co-ops. You can't have unique situations in a co-op because everyone is the same. Otherwise, it creates, in essence, two classes of stock, which then throws it into a different tax consequence for everybody. So a lot of the things are being requested, I think, sometimes are out of ignorance rather than it being a valid business reason. Someone mentioned that there needs to be more transparency. Well, what transparency means is that non-members wanted to see all of the financials before joining. And those financials were produced, they were provided. The individual's name is Gary Prassel. He owns Pendleton Bottling, which is a Pepsi distributor. And so they've received all of those things. We've agreed to change the bylaws to allow for more transparency and more access to information that is unparalleled in any other company that that I've ever been involved in. And you know, currently I sit on the board of three other companies. None of them have that. So I believe that the requests that are being made are being met when it makes good business sense and is legal to do so. The rest of them are more or less excuses to avoid it. Senator Farioli hosted a meeting a week ago last Tuesday, and a lot of the people that were in this room showed up for it, and then additional distributors showed up for it. And I made a comment that I said up front was somewhat caustic. I said, what's driving this is greed. And everyone said, well, that's pretty caustic. And then they went around the table and they said, well, I'm not greedy. I'm not greedy. I'm not greedy. And I believe that there was eight people who said that. And at the end, Senator Farioli stood up and said, well, I guess everyone then is going to sit down and have open discussions about how we can join and get everyone together. And that's when Senate Bill 992 was on the table. On Wednesday morning, Senate Bill 992 died. It just went away. Last week, late last week, in the beginning of this week, I called every one of those members, or I'm sure, I apologize. I called most of those members. I spoke to Russ Strandholm, Gary Prassel, Ken Pastega, and Ed Elms. So four of those businesses. And what I was told was, well, Senate Bill 992 is dead. So I don't really have an incentive to sit down at this point and talk about it. But I'll tell you what, I'll get back to you. I said, well, when? You know, can we set a date? I don't know. So without things that are pushing everyone in the right direction, we're never going to get there for the state. So is this bill important? Sorta. I mean, we'll all live without it. But is it going to put the state in the right direction? Yes, it is. I think that there are more excuses out there than what a pregnant nun would have of how this happened. Okay? Everybody's got a reason why they don't want to join. I bought this piece of equipment. I run this route. I employ all these people. That's great. But you know what? It's time that we kind of look forward and think about where we really want to be in 5 or 7 years. And it's not an east side, west side thing. I'm from the east side. I have the same issues that everybody else has. Yeah, it does cost more money, but you know what? It's the right thing. And that's why we joined. That's why I participate at the level I do at the OBRC, and that's why I postponed a family vacation to come here and testify today. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Representative Gerard.
What percentage statewide of distributors are not members right now?
I don't know the exact percentage. I can name the distributors. I don't know if I can name all of the people who participate.
It's a family.
So
I was trying to stay away from that.
There's approximately, the number that everyone bats around is there's about 95%. That's more than likely of the volume than it is the actual number of distributorships, because there's some very large distributors on the west side that cover basically the entire state in certain cases. I can tell you that all of the grocers are involved. Probably about 90% of all of the water companies, the guys who actually manufacture water, are involved. And I can tell you that I would say probably put it three quarters
of the distributors. I would say by percentage it's probably 80% by number of distributorships. Yeah.
So it's not just the distributors. This isn't a distributor problem. This is a manufacturer or supplier issue. It's a grocer's issue. It is a distributor issue. And more importantly, it's a citizen's issue. And I think that the citizens want the water bill. I think that the environmentalists are driving it faster than the distributors and the grocers can want it or handle it. But the distributors, I would say 75 or 80% are members of the major chains in the state. It's 100%. So of the grocers, and I would say we probably have about 90% compliance from the supplier side.
Thank you.
Further question? Yeah, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John or Barry, would you for us describe the types of members and their participation in OBRC? And let me break that down, because I think this gets confusing. If it's confusing among us who do it, it's certainly confusing to those who don't. But from the standpoint that, and I'll use my own company as an example, I am a bottler by contract. By description, I am a distributor because my production is done elsewhere. Others in this room are of the same, by contract, they are bottlers. By description, are distributors. Correct me when I go off course here. You also have retailers who are distributors. Okay, we heard from the Groceries Association, but there are retailers who are distributors through their brand name. And then you would have a third class, and I don't know what you call them as a membership item, but a producer. And that would be, again, if you go back to Nestle, Arrowhead, some other water. Are those the only three classes within OBRC, or are there others?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I think you've identified the three classes. It might be a little more complex within those classes, but that's an accurate description, I would say.
And a follow-up to that?
Sure, yes.
So are you aware of any other recycling system in the state of Oregon that has the number of or even close to agreements for redemption of those type of containers in terms of in total between all three distribution systems or customers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, no, there is not any other system anywhere in the state that would provide deposit reconciliation, which is really the critical issue here for all three types of classes.
One more follow.
Absolutely.
We've heard a number of people today talking about the possibility of getting something else done. And I'd like to hear you say you agree or disagree that there is still a possibility of hope that these organizations who are not currently members could be, might be. I mean, where are we there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I am an optimistic man, so I would always say there is hope. And I think I would defer to the grocers with respect to the House bill, the 3704, because as a distributor co-op, the issues that Barry has raised about the future certainly pertain to issues of everyone working together. But for today, the partner within the industry that is mostly harmed when everyone's not working together is the grocer. They're the ones that have to do the backroom sorts. And we talk about reverse vending, electronic counts, and so forth. The reality of the distribution of volume around the state is that there are 3,000 locations where bottle bill containers are returned. The co-op services all of those in every city in the state, without exception, as far as I know. So we are already going everywhere in the state servicing those 3,000. But of those 3,000, maybe 400 are large grocers with reverse vending equipment and the ability to electronically account. The balance, the 2,600 locations, without OBRC, would have over 100 different sorts in their back rooms because of the three-tier system that representative, or the three-tier, that's not the right way to put it, the three different types of distribution. Because of that occurrence throughout the state, the back rooms within the stores without one entity doing the deposit reconciliation could have sorts over 100 can bags, plastic bags, and glass pallets. So I know that went beyond your question, but
yes, you can answer as well.
Mr. Chair, everyone's talking about money, and the distributor collects the nickels, pays the nickels, and that unredeemed portion, today the distributor keeps that. If you're a member of the OBRC, a portion of that goes to help defer the costs of operating the OBRC. And the other piece of this is salvage, and that's what this bill is really about, is about salvage. And you've heard that salvage is sometimes valuable. The price of aluminum goes up, price of aluminum goes down, same thing with the other commodities. This bill only deals with what's electronically counted. Okay, so in my territory, okay, in my primary territory, there's only 11 locations where things are electronically counted. And that accounts for approximately 70% of my salvage. So it's not like you're asking these people that are not members to give up everything. What you're saying is that it's okay not to participate, and that's fine. If you want to be an independent business and not participate, that's okay. But as a business operating in the state of Oregon, you need to help financially support the good of the citizens. And we're requesting via this bill that, depending upon where you live, because the territories are all different, somewhere between 65 and 70% of your salvage is going to help that cause. And the grocers will get a portion of that to help offset the costs that they incur, because they're all members, so they'll get that back as a patronage, or that money will go to building redemption centers. If you're a distributor, the same thing. You may get a portion of it back as patronage, or that money may go to building a future redemption center. But what we're saying is that the people who participate in the beverage industry need to help put the state in the right direction, recycle more, and pay for redemption centers. That's all you're saying. You're not saying we're going to put you out of business. It won't put you out of business. You still keep your unredeemed, and you're still going to keep somewhere between 30 and 35% of your salvage. We're asking them to give up a portion. If they don't want to join, I can live with that. It was a very difficult decision for our family to make. We elected to join. But they're not giving up everything by any means. The other thing that's in this bill that John mentioned was this reporting. For the first time in 30-some-odd years, you're actually going to know. Okay, I mean, I know. I got the report right here. So I can tell you what the redemption rates are. But for the very first time in over 30 years, you're actually going to get to see that. So I think that there's a lot of good things in this bill. I see more good than bad.
Other questions? I guess something I would ask is, I think Representative Nolan asked a question early on, and everybody said that John Anderson can answer that question. So I thought I'd pose that question since she's not here about the I guess it was about the
organizational
structure.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I remember it now. she asked the question, yeah, how is the governance?
That's what it was, yeah, thank you.
How does that work? And so we have a 9-member board, and a requirement of being on the board is that your primary business is in beverage distribution. So I guess first and foremost, you would have to be a primarily involved in beverage distribution to be on the board. From there, initially, the board was set based on the distributors that were involved in some other type of co-op around the state. And they were those positions were set for a 3-year period. And the intent there was certainly not to exclude anyone, but it was to make sure that those who understood the bottle bill well and how co-ops operate were part of the governance until we were up and running, substantially so that we could deal with change and other things that came along. So I think the board is fairly represents the state. We have a board member from Connecticut who is part of Nestle Waters. He would represent one of the three groups that Representative Hannon mentioned, the non-franchise folks, which there are a lot of. We've got thousands of SKUs that are coming in and around the state of water and flavored water that don't have a truck and a driver to pick it up and haul it. We've got a number of franchise distributors, both large and small, that are on our board. Barry is one of those. We cover all of the geographic regions in terms of representation. So I don't hear a lot of, in fact, I don't hear any complaints from the membership. We have about 65 different distributor members that are part, that make up the co-op. I don't hear concerns from anyone at this point that the representation isn't adequate. But it is, that's a good question.
Thank you. I see no more questions. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
We have one person left, and that's Jim Gardner. He wants to talk about another amendment, so we'll let him do that, just so everybody's on the out there, and we don't have much time, John. So
I'll be very quick.
And the thing I want to tell people is I'm really pleased we had the time, because I really wanted to get everybody a chance to really put that out on the line so we can make a better decision. So, John.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner. I'm appearing today for Walmart, which is, I am happy to say, a satisfied and happy participant in OBRC. And I'm also very pleased to announce, I think for the first time today, that Walmart, it is the intent of Walmart to sign a letter of intent with OBRC to be one of three major retailers that will participate in the very first OLCC application for a redemption center in Wood Village, and it is our expectation that as more of the approximately 90 redemption centers that are planned around the state, as those applications are rolled out and the plans developed, that when one of those is in our geographic area, that we will participate in those as well. So we view ourselves as friends of OBRC, advocates of OBRC, participants in OBRC, and pioneers with OBRC in developing the redemption center approach. That being said, we think that in this particular situation that we're engaged in, and if I may just take a little bit of a moment to set this up, Mr. Chair, OBRC right now is a creature of agreement. It's a creature of contract, voluntarily developed, like the system that really has developed on behalf of the industry to meet the needs of the citizens and to serve the bottle bill's special requirements. This bill changes that and makes that entity in part a creature of statute, and that's an important distinction and an important change that I think we all need to be cognizant of when you essentially put the weight of the state into tilting what would otherwise be a essentially a free market contracted contracted for arrangement. And I think there's a justification for that, because that the market that we are talking about is itself an artifact of regulation. So it's a special kind of situation, but it brings with it, I think, certain risks and challenges that are unique to a situation when the state is essentially weighing in to adjust the terms of a contract. One of those is that you're going to get the kind of dissent that you heard today, and that's a great concern, frankly, to us because of the kind of market that we serve, particularly in rural areas. We don't. It's a concern that we have that level of dissent, even on behalf of a minority of distributors. We're also concerned that the potential exists when you have this kind of a statewide organization, essentially without competition, that there's a lack of pricing and cost discipline. And I think that's inevitable. There are countervailing factors you can build into that, but that's a concern that certainly we have as a company that's zealously committed to cost reduction in every respect of our operations. The amendment that I wanted you to consider, the Dash 2s, I characterized in a quick conversation with the chair as a kind of a, you can think of it as a sort of an exit ramp, kind of private sector sunset clause that would allow essentially entities that are in all three of the categories that Representative Hanna addressed, retailers, wholesalers, and importers or manufacturers that fall into all three of those categories. An entity that is all of those, which Walmart is, which Safeway is, Fred Meyer, etc., to essentially opt out of this tilting of the contractual relationship that the statute would impose, so that you could say basically, we're withdrawing from the co-op and these provisions shall not apply. Now, why is that important? I think it yields a situation where there is a greater incentive on behalf of an entity that is essentially getting a state assistance in terms of its organizational ability, creates a greater incentive for it to keep its costs down and to keep its service level up. That simple, Mr. Chairman. So again, I want to emphasize, we're friends of OBRC, we're participants, we're on the cutting edge of the Redemption Center effort, but we want to make sure that, number one, the concerns of some of the minority of distributors are heard and listened to, and second, most important, that this operation remains as efficient and cost effective as possible.
Any questions? I see none.
Thank you very much. That ends the testimony. I want to say, and I think for the whole committee, this has been enlightening testimony from a lot of people. I appreciate the fact that people came as far as they did and the information that was given. And so with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3704. And is there anything else to come before the committee? Anybody have any concerns? then we're going to close our rules hearing for today. Thank you very much.
Free pass. Ha ha ha.